Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did it feel like a breakthrough?
No, we're almost there. We got to keep getting better. Like at the end of the game, I feel like we can close it out as an offense, stay on the field, and just finish the game. So I thought defense played outstanding. We had a great game with field position, so special teams had a huge part in that. And then we just took advantage of our opportunities and played smart on offense and went down and scored points.
You know that voice. It's Mr. Biscuit.
Mitchell Trubisky. I think that was our buddy Pat Finley posing the question to him about whether or not it was a breakthrough. This was that your band as well? Like, were you and Julio?
Julio was just crushing it back there in the producer booth.
Regale us a bit, because you and Julio were talking to me about the greatness of this particular band.
There's two great ones. The one that we just heard was Fish, of course, and that is the band that helped me meet my wife. I met my wife at a Fish show in Cincinnati.
Really?
Yeah, so near and dear to my heart without question. Then I believe most of the other bumps in and out thus far have been on Freeze McGee. And I'm not going to tell the listeners how many times I've seen on Freeze McGee, but I will say one of the best local bands going.
You made an investment, though.
And awesome dudes. I've gotten friendly with them, have spent so much time and energy chasing them all around the world, not this country, and have zero regrets. If you have not listened on Freeze McGee, go out there and do yourselves a favor. You like rock and roll music, progressive music. They are so eclectic. I'm pretty sure they'll have some new fans if you just go out and check them out.
Well, I'm not familiar with their work, but I will make it a point to try and hear them at this point, since you and Julio are both so into them.
And a big shout out to Julio again. He's just crushing it. It gets me in the groove here.
Yeah,
I came
right
in this morning, and we've got Wappy Sprayberry coming on the first bump into the show. And
name of a tune.
Yeah, they're a little different. It's a fun name of a band. Humphreys McGee is about as random as it gets. Most of them went to Notre Dame and started out in South Bend, and a couple of them still call Chicago home. So
yeah.
I don't know when they're coming here next, but go catch them in your area. I'm sure they tour quite frequently.
Well, apparently, if you can thank some of these folks for meeting your wife, that's a good thing. I can thank P. Diddy and the fam for meeting my wife.
Is that right?
Yeah. She was actually, my wife played field hockey at Iowa, where I played football, and I heard she was on a karaoke machine down the hallway on the same floor of the dorm that I lived on. And I heard this female voice doing some rap music to the beat of P. Diddy's, I think it was Can't Nobody Hold Me Down, or it was one of Diddy's 90s tunes.
Sure, yeah.
And she was laying down a track that her and her team were going to use for their warm-ups before their field hockey games at Iowa. And she had changed the lyrics to just suit her name and her teammates' names and telling little stories about them. But it was to a P. Diddy beat. I was like, oh, let me go. Go check this out. So she's turned around, and her back is to the door, and I'm hearing the beat, and she's laying down the track. And then at some point, she turns around and notices there's like a dozen young men, like with our heads peering in the side of the door, just trying to figure out what exactly is going on with this karaoke rap that's happening in the room. And then the rest, as they say, is history from there. So thanks, Diddy.
That's a cool story.
The one time I met Diddy in person, I did not have time to regale him with that story. I got to make sure I do that next time. If I ever cross paths with Diddy again, I got to make sure I let him know. So he is Arthur Arkish, as you heard there. I'm Anthony Heron. This is 670 The Score, breaking down some Bears. We're going to talk some other NFC matchups as well with some of the guests we have coming up on the show. We're going to have Jim Ozarski of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel coming up here very soon. We're going to talk about the Green Bay Packers. And Chris Thomason later on in the show to talk some Minnesota Vikings. He's of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. And we'll get some college football in with Pete Futek of College Football News later on. Also, later in the day, though, because you've got myself and Arthur until noon, and then you're going to have Bulls and Miami Heat. That pregame is going to start at 4:45 with Chuck Swirsky and Bill Winnington. Of course, you can listen to that on the radio.com app if you're on the move. Then after Bulls basketball, we're going to have Sunday Night Football, where the LA Rams, are going to take on the Seattle Seahawks. We'll join the Westwood One broadcast following the Bulls postgame show on 670 the score. Let's go out to the phone lines, though. We've certainly had those lighting up here. And before we went to break, we had Ray on the line out in Orland Park, wanted to react to something that Arthur and I were talking about. Ray, what's happening? You got Anthony here and Arthur Arkish.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, I do think the season is salvageable if they don't make the playoffs, because if Matt Nagy can figure out how to be a better coach, that's definitely salvageable. And one of the ways he can do that is we all praise the Andy Reid tree. The last time I checked, Andy Reid doesn't have any Super Bowls, and his offenses tend to get figured out. He should focus on some other coaches who have Super Bowls, like John Harbaugh, who's got a couple in his cabinet, who is a great adapter with his offense. You know, he won with Joe Flacco, and now he's winning with Lamar Jackson and playing a very different style of football with his defensive skill positions and his offensive skill positions. And I feel like John Harbaugh might have called Matt Nagy and said, hey, adapt. You have a great quarterback. He can run. He can do stuff. Don't make him somebody else. Adapt. And that's how you win championships.
All right, interesting call there, Ray. And I think that maybe that's a very, I don't know, refreshing way to view it. I'm not sure that all of Chicago would view it in that manner. So Ray being the first caller we had on in that question, and for those who may just be tuning in here at the top of this 10 o'clock hour, basically the question that Arthur and I were posing was essentially whether or not the Bears' season through this last three games, they're back above 500. They got a chance to get to 10-6. And that was the record that I predicted it would, you know, because I think the over-under, I was talking to Joe O about this at some point before the season started, and he was telling me that the over-under, I think, was like 10.5, or it was either 9.5, 10.5, something like that. And I thought they were going to be a 10-win team again this season. Just wasn't sure if that was going to guarantee them a playoff spot. There's still a chance for them to be a 10-win team this season. And as you were referencing, Arthur, that may not guarantee them anything. It certainly won't alone guarantee them anything as far as postseason play. But that's what Ray was reacting to, just whether or not the Bears, if they show improvement at quarterback, if Matt Nagy continues to structure things in a manner that can lead to the Bears just looking like a better team, if they don't make the playoffs, then is that still a, I don't know, a passing grade, I suppose, for this season? Is there still some positives from that? Let's actually, since we've got a few different callers and we're going to have some guests coming on here, let's stay with the phone lines for the moment. And we've got Jeff, who is out in Glenview, who's got some thoughts on where Bears fans sit with things. Jeff, you got Arthur Arkish and Anthony Heron here. What's happening with you?
Hi, guys. I'm not sure you'll be able to answer my question, because I sure can't. I'm sure there are a lot of Bear fans that can't. And after I ask it, I'll hang up and listen. Why do we have to go through this garbage every single year with the Chicago Bears, at least for the last 20 years? What is it that they cannot figure out how to get a balanced football team on the field, balanced on both sides of the ball? We have to go through this garbage every single year with the Chicago Bears. And I'm just wondering, what is it about the organization that is not clicking? And I thank you guys for the show. Great, great guys. And I will hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Definitely, you know, hear some frustration and understand the frustration. It's been you know, not enough winning in the grand scheme of things, obviously, just the one Super Bowl, and things have not gone according to plan over a sustained stretch. I do get that. I think last year, the Bears actually were among the more balanced teams in the NFL, and they've shown signs of being that again. So it's hard to, and Anthony, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's hard to sort of, we're talking about a span of 34 years since the Bears won a Super Bowl. So yeah, to pin it on one thing, the only real constant there, obviously, has been the McCaskey family. I don't think this is a McCaskey issue by any stretch of the imagination. Let's remember, they did hire the reigning coach and the reigning executive of the year. So, again, I understand the frustration that this season has been disappointing up until this point. But what about the fact that there are a lot of Bears fans clearly that'll be disappointed if this team goes 9-7 or 10-6? Doesn't that signal that the bar has been raised even just in the past year? I mean, from where they were and you know, and kind of being mired in mediocrity, I think expectations have raised, and that's a good thing. And again, as rough as things started here, the Bears still have a shot. If you told people after the 12-4 season, where maybe they weren't quite as good, maybe some of the defensive takeaways and things like that covered up a few of the shortcomings. I know Anthony was alluding to some of those earlier. If you follow that up with another 10-6 team and a chance to get in the playoffs, I don't know. I mean, that's probably the best back-to-back if they're able to get there. And I'll go look and see where I may be wrong, but I think that would be about as successful as they've been in back-to-back seasons here, Anthony, for quite a long time.
And I was talking to Bernstein about this before the season. I referenced it when I was on with he and Connor the other day, because he was more in the group of, you know what, if they're talking all that yak, then they got to come into the season and deliver a championship. And I think that's where a lot of the city was with it. But, you know, it sounds like you and I have a similar vantage point on what this season could still be, because, you know, as the Thor Ragnarok story I was telling, this, if they don't make the playoffs this year, certainly if they don't win a Super Bowl this year, does not mean the end of the road. If you come out of this, and Matt Nagy, in his own very positive, very glasses half full way, has even referenced it in the midst of the four-game losing skid, that there's positives that can be born from this franchise, this current construct of players and coaches going through hard times, because there weren't really legitimate hard times in 2018. Right. Everybody was healthy. The system was new. They were winning games, you know, despite when the offense would struggle and defenses scoring touchdowns and all that. And I used the term over the offseason and as this season began. I used it with Loho. I used it with Connor and Dan. The end of the Bears' innocence. And whichever version of that was going to take place this season, and we've been witnessing that over the last couple of months, where there's so many questions and slings and arrows going at the coach and going at the quarterback and even at the defense to a certain extent, because they're not scoring touchdowns and getting all the takeaways they did last season. So even if everything went great, you're going to have a bunch of guys. And one topic you brought up about some of the potential free agents is definitely something I think we should get into. If things went great, you're going to have a bunch of guys wanting to get paid after the season, so things could end in that manner. Or if you have this stretch of disappointment that the city is experiencing and going through with the team and folks booing and players reacting to folks booing and everything else, then it is the end of the Bears' innocence, and it can still lead to positive times, positive things from growing through that fire together. So that, to me, has been that's probably been the most riveting part about it. And this hour has been brought to you by Santana Energy Services. Visit SantanaEnergyServices.com. All this Bears discussion that we've got going on here. Let's should we get one more caller in, Arthur, you think, before we go to a timeout? Let's do that. We got Joe in Mount Greenwood, who's been on hold for a bit, want to talk some Bears. What's up with you, Joe? You got Arthur and Anthony here on the Score.
Hey, guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Joe.
Thank you.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with Trubisky. He's a B-plus guy. He's not Mahomes, and he's not Brady, and he shouldn't be throwing the ball 60 times a game, and Nagy shouldn't be trying to make him something that he's not. The Bears' offensive line right now is 100% better than it was in the beginning of the year, 100% better. And you guys know that's where the game is won or lost, on the line of scrimmage. So if you've been watching, which you probably have, Trubisky's throwing the ball now really – he's putting some zip on it, and he's learning how to drop the ball in. And I think the game that he came out at the end gave him some more incentive to step up and be himself. I'll hang up and listen, guys.
It's a good call, Joe.
Yep, good. You took the words right out of my mouth. That's a good call. You're spot on about the offensive line. I think the B-plus might be a little generous at this point. Mitch is still working toward that. Yeah. But you're right, and I think just bigger picture, it's important to point out this isn't a 1 year window. That's what's nice here is again, even if and I want to reiterate, I don't think the Bears are going to go 10-6. I think they are likely, or I can see them winning two out of the next three, finishing at 9-7, finishing with a winning record, and seeing where that takes them. But Mitch is still going to be on that cost control contract next year. Yes, Khalil Mack's salary cap number skyrockets, but it's not going to cripple the rest of the team. They're still going to be able to go out, and we're going to get into some of those free agent decisions, re-signing Allen Robinson, seeing if you can get Eddie Jackson maybe on a team-friendly deal because of the way things have played out, still being able to continue to improve the depth. This is a team that should be very, very competitive again next year. Anyone who thinks that the window is going to slam shut, and that's the level of disappointment that everyone's enduring this season, I think that's a little bit misplaced.
Agreed. Let's take a timeout. We've still got Mike on the phone line. We'll be able to get Mike in on the other side before we get to some of our guests here, because we are going to have – or actually, you know what? On the other side of this, we are going to have Jim Ozarski from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So we'll have Mike. You can call right back in after we talk to Jim. We're going to talk about the Green Bay Packers, and that's the Bears' next opponent, of course. Bears have an extended layoff, about a week and a half, to get ready for the Pack. So we will talk to Jim, get his Milwaukee Journal Sentinel perspective on Green Bay. We'll do that right next on The Score.
Saturday night, join Julie DeCaro and Maggie Hendricks for the Miller Lite Top Draft Show from 2 to 5 at Jameson Pub in Joliet. Enjoy the broadcast, enter for a chance to win Bears tickets, and watch a live interview with former Chicago Bear great Lance Briggs. Brought to you by Miller Lite. Hold true.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Quick Work by Julio Rosseo. As I mentioned before our last break, that I met my wife due in part to this jam right here, P. Diddy and the Family. Can't nobody hold me down. This is the one, because I wasn't 100% sure, Julio, off the top of my head. I knew it was a Diddy song, but yes, now that I'm hearing the beat in my head, this is definitely the one. Arthur Arkish and Anthony Heron here on 670 The Score. We'll take it out to the phone lines and break down some Green Bay Packers with our guest here, Jim Ozarski of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is on Twitter at Jim Ozarski. That is O-W-C-Z-A-R-S-K-I. That's where you can find him on the Twitter sphere. Jim, you got Arthur and Anthony here on 670 The Score. How you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you? So you mentioned Diddy. I guess that's old school, but you're not going to go all the way back on that one?
Well, it certainly crosses my mind that specifically this song that was just playing, that, you know, one of his original, I guess, remix type jams, was because actually this song was part of the reason I met my wife. And we were talking earlier, Arthur and I, on the show about music that allowed him to meet his lovely wife. So this specific song, P. Diddy and the Fam, Can't Nobody Hold Me Down. That's why that was the choice of our producer, Julio.
I can appreciate that. Of course, shout out to Grandmaster Flash and the message as well.
No doubt. Have you ever met a significant other because of music?
I don't know if I've met anyone because of that, but okay. My wife works in radio, FM radio. So, I mean, music's a big part of our lives. So I can appreciate that for sure.
Very nice. Well, I've been at Lambeau Field. I spent a lot of my rookie season with the Green Bay Packers. I know Go Pack Go is the big jam that they like to play in and out of some of the drives that are going on there. What's your thought on where Green Bay sits at the moment? Because early in the season, when things were truly rolling, and even the defense as well was a big part of why Green Bay was winning games early on, what's been some of the reasoning behind where the Green Bay defense seems to have taken a bit of a step back here recently?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, that holding the Bears to 3 points in that season opener, as the year wore on, you're correct, didn't look as good, right, as the Bears continued to struggle offensively. The mantra up here is the bend but don't break. I mean, they're the 28th ranked defense in football, not very good, worse than last year, in fact, with so much high-priced talent and high draft picks. But when opponents get to the red zone, guys, they don't score. I think they've got 4 interceptions in the red zone as a defense. They tend to force field goals, and that's, you know, worked just enough for them to be 9-3. But you're right, I think going forward, that needs to shore up a little bit. I mean, to their credit, I guess they're not happy about the yards they give up. But, you know, if they want to go on the road in the postseason, guys, they're going to have to be better than that.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Jim. It's good to hear from you, man. And I'm curious, obviously the Packers go and get right out at MetLife last week after what was just a disastrous trip out to San Francisco. What do you think, what kind of concerns linger from the way they got handled by the 49ers outside of the defense? I mean, it was not a good game for Aaron Rodgers, and then he goes, and obviously it's a 180 versus the Giants, but and I know Brian Bulaga makes it back last week. What has lingered, and what maybe was a little bit overblown by one off night a couple weekends ago?
Well, I think what's lingered is there's a real question of, is this team good enough to roll with the upper echelon of the NFC? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, 9-3, you are what you are, but I mean, like a lot of teams, who have they beat? Right? I mean, Dallas is a signature win on the road. How do you feel about that now? You know, they lost at home to Philadelphia. They lost on the road to the Chargers. And as you're right, the 49ers took it to them. So I think that's the overall concern going forward. Now, maybe what was I don't know what else is overblown out of that, though, Arthur. Like, they took away Aaron Jones, And yeah, they have Aaron Rodgers, and he can look good at times. But really, guys, in 2019, Aaron Jones is the engine of this offense. So I think coming out of it, the concern is if teams stop him, how does this Matt LaFleur offense work? Because they are run first, believe it or not.
And sticking with that point for the moment, Jim, the run first element of it, we heard a lot of talk before the season began about how the marriage was already potentially in shambles between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, and it wasn't going to work because of all the conjecture that was going on. As the season progressed, they were winning games, but Rodgers wasn't necessarily putting up big numbers initially. Now it feels like his game, in addition to that lead rushing attack, has rounded into form. So where do things sit right now, where they've only won two out of their last four games, and Rodgers has been a bit up and down from a numbers standpoint. So where does it seem like that fits at the moment between LaFleur and Rodgers?
Yeah, it's definitely better than how it started, which makes sense. I mean, so you've got a brand new offensive system, and there were hiccups. I mean, not only in the offseason where Aaron Rodgers went to a play sheet on his he's got a wristband on, guys, for the first time in his career. Hmm. You know, learning how to spit out all these plays, Matt LaFleur learning how to give this quarterback audibles. The system doesn't really allow for that. And then they had some sideline blowups at the start of the year, which, by the way, were started by the head coach, who came to the quarterback and said, "I don't like what you're doing. Tell me what you're seeing." So they've gotten over that, and now you're – when it looks good, guys, but there's still that little bit of the growing pains of a first-year coach, second-year play caller in this quarterback. I mean, that's the thing people need to remember. This is LaFleur's second go-around calling plays. So he's still going through that stuff. And you know that. I mean, it takes time to learn these things as a head coach and a play caller. So they're better, but I think the overall offensive inconsistency still speaks to them still trying to figure out what works best on a week-to-week basis.
Is personnel a real factor here? I know it points this season. Well, obviously, without Devontae Adams, that's a little bit different. But, you know, there were questions about even his sidekick. And recently, I guess you've seen Alan Lazard come on a little bit and some other guys. How much of that has been a factor? How much of not having a pivot from a Devontae Adams and an Aaron Jones has been a part of this issue?
Yeah, I think the biggest problem here, guys, is that Jimmy Graham is not performing like the highest paid tight end in football. And, you know, we saw it last year. And you know, once Mike McCarthy was fired, it was, oh, well, that offense wasn't designed for a tight end. This offense is, and that's true. You look at what George Kittle's doing, and tight ends in this offense can be successful. However, Jimmy Graham just can't run and move like he used to. Mercedes Lewis isn't that guy. So other than I know there's a focus on receivers, Arthur, especially the fantasy listeners out there, but really it's the tight end. The fact they don't have a game breaker and an athletic guy to catch and run and can do all those things. Because really, guys, this offense is designed, you guys know this, they don't need a quote-unquote number two or number three. Again, look at San Francisco. It's meant to have these, you know, kind of just anybody can catch 45 balls. But I will say the tight end, I think, is the black hole currently this season that they're trying to work around.
What is it that's brought Aaron Jones back to earth?
That is, you know, if I knew that, I think Matt LaFleur would give me a consulting fee. I think San Francisco went in and said, kind of took the Belichick mindset of, we're taking that guy away. For as good as Aaron Rodgers is, this offense, again, rolls through Jones. And the Giants, to their credit, kind of did the same thing. Washington, Bill Callahan said that's their focus. I think maybe the quote was, make Aaron Rodgers beat us, for as crazy as that sounds. So I think that's the next piece of this chess match. As I referenced, Matt LaFleur is a growing, maturing play caller. He's got to find ways to get him the ball and get that going, whether it be offensively, through the pass game or through the running game. He's got to touch at least 20 times. But the added emphasis on D and is kind of where he's stalled out. His teams are really trying to take him away.
It's just absolutely fascinating to hear this. And I think we knew it, but it's still just to hear that it's another Aaron who's kind of running the Packers offense after a decade plus is definitely interesting. And Aaron Jones, certainly a really, really good player, but I don't know. It still kind of catches me off guard. Let me ask you, Jim, what are the chances that the Packers get caught looking past Washington and this Darius Geis, Adrian Peterson-led run game today to the Chicago Bears? Talk about things I didn't expect to be saying a few weeks ago, but what's the focus today? I'd imagine it has to be on making sure they stop those two backs coming off the big performance last week.
Yeah, it definitely is, guys. I mean, they're not good enough to look past anyone. I mean, yeah, they're 9-3. But we started this conversation with talking about a 28th-ranked defense in football,
right,
and now we're talking about offensive inconsistencies. Look, there was 17-13 in the fourth quarter in New York, and they needed a 4th-and-10 conversion to extend that lead. They can't look past anyone. And I will give Matt LaFleur and his staff this credit. They haven't done that. They've beaten the teams they should beat. They've had two bad losses on the West Coast. They've come back after those to play well, to win those games against Carolina and New York. So it might look ugly for Packers and Packers fans in the first half here because they do struggle against the run. But I do expect them to win, kind of like last week, pull away going late and then move on to Chicago. I just don't think I think they know they can't look ahead.
Curious about Rashawn Gary and just what he, I suppose, up to this point necessarily hasn't added to the Packers defense up to this point. When I was in Green Bay my rookie year, they had drafted Jamal Reynolds out of Florida State in 2001 in the first round. And, I mean, he was, I don't know, felt like he was about 6'1", 215 pounds. And he was, you know, trying to play NFL defensive end. And it didn't go so well for his time in the league and specifically as a Packers first-round pick. Now, Rashawn Gary has all the physical stature, all the dimensions, all the things you could hope for someone of his size to play end or outside linebacker or anything they could hope for. Hadn't been a whole lot of productivity, though. So what's his role right now, and do you see it progressing in any manner?
Yeah, it's interesting. Fans are frustrated with the number 12 overall pick. The coaches and the team are not. Yeah, you're right. He has no stats, guys. I mean, he had a sack back in week 3 against Denver. He's had 5 games where he hasn't registered even a half a tackle or you know, an assisted tackle. He plays about 23% of the snaps in relief of Preston and Za'Darius Smith. And that's one reason why there's no production. Those guys don't come off the field. They're both going to the Pro Bowl. Over double-digit sacks, I think Za'Darius Smith is sort of a sleeper DPOY candidate, guys. I think if he can, you know, do some flashy things here at the end of the season, maybe he gets a vote or two. But, yeah, Gary's interesting because that was the knock, right? And coming out of college, you know, all the talent, all the skill, the big flashes, and then where's the consistency and total production? That's married up to this season, which has people kind of worried. I think the adjustment to an outside linebacker in this Mike Pettine scheme is taking him a little longer than maybe fans would like. But I think the team is happy with it. I think they feel he's coming along. He can set an edge. They don't feel he's a liability in the run game, which is important. And I think they feel the pass rush will come when needed. And right now it's not needed. But of course, the 23% of the snaps he is playing, I'm sure they would like to see a sack or a fumble or some kind of big play here.
And an interesting juxtaposition there, of course, with the other first-round rookie. And I want to ask you about Darnell Savage and what he is. I know they've gotten a lot more mileage out of him, of course. But just a real quick follow-up on Gary first. There was some thought maybe coming out of school that his best position wasn't going to be at outside linebacker. What was the process of settling him in there versus, say, a disruptive interior penetrator somewhere where I think you might argue maybe there would be a path to more playtime for him given the way the Packers are currently set up?
It's a great point, Arthur. Yeah, they immediately draft night set outside linebacker.
Right.
Now, this is an issue they ran into in a previous regime with Nick Perry coming out of USC, first-round pick. And they kind of put him out, you know, outside line. He would have been an undersized DN, maybe to what Ant was saying, you know, the Reynolds kid. But I think they feel he fits this system and that sort of dual outside linebacker, but able to put his hand on the ground. See, like Za'Darius Smith, for instance, that's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
He moves inside. He's an interior rusher on third downs a lot of times. And I think they feel if they can get Gary to do some of that outside work, then they can move him in and use that size and speed to his advantage, you know, on interior downs. I think that's a long-term goal. We'll have to see if it plays out that way.
Sure. And then just tell us quickly about Savage and, and how he's fit in the secondary. He was a kid I loved so much coming out of school and looking like a nice pick.
Yeah, they really like him. Slowed early after a hot start with an ankle injury, missed a couple games. He's made some rookie mistakes, some coverage issues. A couple picks, though, really intuitive, very fast. That 4-3 shows up, guys, and they really like the fact that he can go side to side and kind of be that ball-hawking safety to complement Adrian Amos, who's their sort of steady guy, right? The one who won't make the mistake and won't get beat over the top. That's the hope. But, yeah, Savage, they really like him, and I think that's playing out, Arthur, the way people thought it would. He does look like the real deal back there.
Jim, appreciate your time, man. Great stuff, as always. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, sounds good, guys.
We'll see you Sunday, Jim. Thanks again.
That is Jim Ozarski of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's on Twitter, at Jim Ozarski. That is Jim, OWCZARSKI. He is Arthur Arkus. He's on Twitter, at Arthur Arkus. You know how to spell that one. I am Anthony Heron on Twitter, at Big Ant Heron. And the bottom of the hour was brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves and a $5,000 signing bonus? Visit Sprint on Rand Road in Arlington Heights between 1 and 3 p.m. Saturday for your chance to win. Going to come back, keep talking some Bears, keep talking some NFC North, some playoff picture. Arthur was really bringing up a very interesting point about potential free agents coming up as the season is just weeks away in some form or fashion from coming to a close. Here, some big decisions will need to be made by the Bears as the offseason approaches. So we're going to enlighten you on some of those decisions, give you our thoughts on how that may play out and what makes sense for the Chicago Bears. And, of course, you can get your thoughts in as well, 312-644-6767. That's 312-644-6767. Text line still open at 67011. Arkus and Heron right here on 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I was trying to think of, is that another Arkus special here?
It helps when my microphone's on. That's the Doors. Yeah, that one's taking us way back. So, yeah, back to the 60s. That would have been probably a Hub Arkus special.
Right. So that's why it sounded vaguely familiar, because I was going to wonder if it was one of the ones from, who were the groups there? Was it Mumford & Sons, or who were the groups?
The McGee and Fish.
There you go.
Yes, those people. Yes, them. I didn't know if it was perhaps one of those that I would have heard then, because the riff sounded kind of familiar. But if it's the Doors, then that explains why.
Yeah, good stuff. I'm sure that both of those bands we were referencing have played the Doors over the years. Right. But yeah. Some classic rock, obviously.
And you know what? When Mitch, the boss man, came in during the time out here, because he apparently has no home and decides just to pop back and forth between his residences at 670 Score and in Milwaukee, he posed the question I posed to you before we got on the air here. And I'm assuming some folks out there have noticed the fact that they haven't heard Hub on the air as much over the past week, man. I mean, I'm sure listeners are either concerned or curious. How's he doing? He's been a little bit under the weather lately, right?
He has, yeah. He got rocked by the flu like almost a week and a half. I mean, yeah, it was the Thanksgiving game that he did the broadcast on the sidelines for Westwood One and had no voice at that point. And it got worse before it has finally gotten a little bit better. So, yeah, he's been largely out of commission for like a week and a half, but he did write a great column off the Bears game. We've got him back getting slowly into action, and I expect he will be – I don't think he's going to be listed on the injury report entering week 15.
Okay.
So that's good.
All right.
We do appreciate the concern. We've heard from a lot of the listeners, and yes, I can report that Hub finally is feeling a lot better, and he thanks you guys very much for all reaching out and worrying about him, because we've had a lot of people worrying about him.
I was talking about the movie Thor Ragnarok earlier and drawing a parallel between that and this Bears season. There's a character I didn't mention. Loki is the brother of Thor in the Thor movies and really in the Marvel movies in general. And there is a point where at the top of Ragnarok, Loki has somehow banished his father from one of the nine realms. But Odin is Loki and Thor's father. And Loki has somehow found a way to put a spell on Odin and banish Odin to Earth and gotten him away from Asgard, so then Loki can somehow rule Asgard. So I'm just going to put you on the spot, and you can confirm or deny as you so wish. But have you found a way to banish Hub from Pro Football Weekly so that you can rule this great publication on your own?
Anthony, that is a loaded question, and well, I feel like my head might explode. I hope there's not a pop quiz. Like I said, I'm going to go check out some Thor action, but as long as there's no pop quiz on all of this, I don't think anyone is ready just yet for Hub to be banished.
Okay, all right.
But I'm still plotting.
Okay, good. See, that's more intel than I even anticipated.
No,
good to know.
Yeah, he's we have fun working together, and fortunately he's still the goods, and I just get to kind of ride along. So I'm cool with that role for now. But we appreciate everyone who follows along at Pro Football Weekly, profootballweekly.com/Bears. Looking forward to finishing this season on a strong note in terms of our coverage, along with this team that's doing its best to finish on its own strong note.
And you did hear him use the term "for now." .. Bum, bum, bum. He is Arthur Argus. I'm Anthony Herod here on 670 The Score. There's a topic you brought up a couple of segments ago that I think would be really interesting to get into, just with the potential free agents who could be some interesting storylines for the Bears over the offseason here, especially when factoring in injury, when factoring in playing time, and factoring in money.
Right.
That the Bears will have to spend immediately and will potentially need to save if they're going to spend it on the quarterback position.
Yep.
Over the next year. Who are a couple of the guys who stand out to you? You know, you were mentioning some of the guys to me in a break here, but who stands out to you just from a roster construct standpoint that there will be key decisions for the Bears to make about coming up here?
Yeah, let me just say real quick that it's just fascinating how fluid this whole thing is, because as recently as 3 weeks ago, I think people were envisioning the Bears having to be really aggressive at the quarterback position. Maybe that's changing a little bit. Again, a lot's going to play out here over these final 3 weeks, but it depends on if you thought they were going to go make this big move for a Cam. And I wasn't on board with it. I want to make that clear. But Cam Newton's been one of the big names, obviously. Yeah. You know, I think Marcus Mariota has been another name. It's another one that doesn't excite me much, but the Mark Helfrich connection and Ryan Pace liking him in the 2015 draft. So with all that being said, we still don't know just yet, even despite what Ian Rappaport is saying about how the Bears are all in on Trubisky, and certainly Trubisky doing his part in recent weeks to convince them to try and remain all in. But if we kind of separate the quarterback position and sort of the uncertainty that involves that spot, Anthony, I've been saying now for about 3 weeks, if not a little bit longer than that, that Allen Robinson, despite the fact he still has a year left on his current deal, should be their top in-house priority. When you look at when you look at his complete package here in year two and what he has contributed, when you weigh it versus expectations and just a healthy Allen Robinson after he was coming off the ACL last year, he's looked the part of a true number one wide receiver. Yeah. He's going to end up now this year, it looks like, on pace to have about 100 catches, about 1,000 plus yards, and close to double-digit touchdowns. He's still only, I believe, 26 years old. It was a three-year, $42 million deal. 1 year remaining on that, I'd go ahead and get it done early. See if you can save a little money. I'm of the belief that if you've identified your dudes, get to them early, and you can save a little bit of money that way. So I think A-Rob should be priority number one. Eddie Jackson, I think, has played really well. I know that he hasn't filled up the stat sheet with the interceptions and the return touchdowns. He's also been playing largely a different role this year because of Clinton Dix's arrival. I don't think he's obviously quite the priority he was coming off the first-team All-Pro season. He's not going to be a first-team All-Pro again, but he's another guy that you could potentially get to a year early, I think, would make some sense.
So there would be one year left after this season. On
right. Both Tariq Cohn. Yes. Tariq Cohn, Eddie Jackson, and theoretically Mitch Trubisky are all eligible for second contracts as early as this spring. Of the three of those guys, Eddie Jackson, I guess you could argue, go ahead and try and get it done. Obviously, things haven't gone according to plan for Tariq Cohn or Mitch quite the way we maybe envisioned. Mm-hmm. So I think you could probably hold off on both of those guys. And then, I think linebacker is the other obvious one. How confident are you? And now, unfortunately, Roquan's best stretch of play in year two, Anthony, has been derailed by what certainly sounds like a serious pectoral injury that's likely to end his season. Now, does that affect your confidence in potentially getting him the green dot on a full-time basis and saying, thank you so much, Danny Trevathan. You have been awesome when you've been on the field for the past year and a half. But when you spend the eighth overall pick on a Buckus Award winner who's supposed to be the face of your defense only a year ago, you're supposed to buy yourself the leverage, the flexibility to where maybe you don't have to potentially overspend to make sure Danny Trevathan comes back. even with someone like Nick Kwiatkowski playing well too. So a lot to sort through there, but I think those are some of the bigger decisions facing the Bears, at least as far as in-house stuff goes. What have I forgotten, and what other positions do you think are going to have to be prioritized? We haven't gotten into a ton yet of what's going to be out there elsewhere in the NFL, and we'll get, you know, we'll dig into draft stuff a lot here eventually. Mm-hmm. But right now, just kind of focusing more on in-house and where the holes appear to be. What else? I mean, I would think tight end and offensive tackle are two obvious ones.
Yeah, you would certainly hope so at those positions that I would have hoped they would have addressed just from a depth standpoint last offseason or through last draft cycle where they ended up deciding not to. But I thought you made a really interesting observation about a point that I've made several times here about what Leonard Floyd's role is on this team right now. And he's still going to be under contract for another year if they want it. Right.
Guaranteed for injury only. So they picked up the fifth year option. I believe it's going to be about 13.5 or $14 million for next year.
And so he's a guy they can continue to have around if, in my opinion, because when Leonard Floyd was first drafted, I said it right here on the score right away. You're using a top 10 pick on a guy when at that point the Bears needed a speed rusher. They needed to have an edge rusher.
Yep.
It felt to me like they reached at the time for Leonard Floyd to be that, and he wasn't that in college. He was a Swiss Army knife in college, a very athletic, very active player, played with great energy, and made a number of plays in a number of different roles. He had some sacks, had some interceptions, had a bunch of tackles,
right,
and played in the box, played off the edge, would drop back in coverage. He just did a bunch of things. So the initial portion of his Bears career was viewed as this disappointment, partially because of some injury and partially because of when he was healthy, he had some flashes as a pass rusher, but didn't show consistently any version of dominance that you would hope for as a top 10 pick for what you're hoping for as a pass rusher. But then last season, going into the year, they make the trade. They sign Khalil Mack to the huge contract. So now that answered the need for a dominant edge rusher. And so in my mind, I view that as, you know what, at least you've solved that problem then. The Leonard Floyd not being a dominant edge rusher is no longer an issue because you have Khalil Mack. The observation you made to me when we were talking about it a bit in break, I thought was a really interesting one, because when Akeem Hicks has been out injured, you've seen now, I posted pictures on Twitter during the Thanksgiving game where there's so frequently where there's literally three folks committed to blocking or disrupting Khalil Mack on certain plays, and everyone else is one-on-one. And so if you don't have that opposing force off the opposite edge,
yep,
then how much does that end up negating the potential effectiveness of Khalil Mack? And I do want to get back into that, because I thought that from, you know, a guy who, you know, 13.5 mil, what's the math on how much sense that makes for the opposing outside linebacker pass rusher, and right, how much does that affect Mack coming off the other edge? Since we've moved Chris Thomason of the St. Paul Pioneer Press up to the top of this coming hour, I want to table the Leonard Floyd portion of that discussion until we get into this final hour here, but I just wanted to sort of lay that out.
So we'll get back to it. It's going to be one of the more pressing questions, I feel like, and one of the more complex ones. I'm not sure if there's an easy answer here, but it's big. I mean, that's a lot of money, and without the premium round picks, again, we'll get into it more, I know, but it is interesting to think
about. Yeah, it really is. There's a lot for Ryan Pace to figure out, and then in addition to that, as you referenced a few weeks ago, folks are thinking, all right, quarterback's easy. You just got to figure out something else. All right, now you got your guy, your hand-picked kid who's out here starting to play pretty well lately, so quarterback decision either becomes cloudy or maybe Mitch is just simplifying it for the Bears. We'll see how that part plays out too. So a lot still to come here. Also, college football playoff discussion will come in the final hour as that TV show is going to begin in a few minutes, and we think we have a sense for who the four teams will be in the playoff, but we'll have that discussion as well. But we'll take a timeout, come back, talk to Minnesota Vikings with Chris Thomason of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. We'll do that next right here on 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.